Hello and welcome back to Naturally Adventurous with Charlie and Ken. We have both been pretty busy recently and we found it pretty hard to find any gaps. So this is a rare moment that we've managed to catch each other. I am currently in Japan, just about to leave. I've been here for 6 weeks and I believe you've just arrived in Baja California, Mexico. Is that right, Ken?
Yeah, Baja, California, I think it's called.
But today we're not going to talk about Baja California. I'm sure we will at a point, but we're still playing catch up with some of our recent trips, and today we're going to chat about Ken's short little trip in California, which was a few months ago, I believe.
That's right, that was later in 2023. Before we get into it though, I just have to say I'm kind of amazed we've managed to keep the podcast going. Considering how busy we've been, and it's been a challenge.
Yeah.
I know that probably the quality of recording and such has been a bit variable, but I'm happy we've kept it going. We have talked about going to maybe once every 2 weeks rather than every week. We'll see how long we can sustain this, the weekly podcast.
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge with busy schedules, and we've been very busy this year. So it's been tough, but we've managed to do it, and I'm glad that we have. We've had quite a bit of feedback. We mentioned previously before the thermal imaging podcast that people very often contacted us about that. And of course, we had a lot of feedback after that as well. And a lot of people were like, oh, but you didn't mention this and you didn't mention this. So we were like, oh, maybe we need to do a second thermal imaging podcast. But it was certainly seemed to be quite a popular one, and it's definitely quite a hot topic at the moment.
Yeah, we maybe need to summarize some of the information and feedback we received and do that properly later. I don't think we're quite prepared for that now, but yeah, we do appreciate all the messages, and it's good to know that people are out there listening. It's always encouraging to hear back from listeners.
So, California, I believe that you hadn't birded there before.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy, given all the places I've been, that I, as an American, I had never birded there. You know, it's one of the top handful of states for birding, and there's all kinds of stuff out on the West Coast that isn't elsewhere. I once did like 2 days of birding on the coast of Washington in June, so that was the full extent of my West Coast United States
total
birding.
It's quite an amazing place. I mean, there's a remarkable number of species like kind of endemic to that western side. I mean, just to illustrate that, you know, I'm a big world lister and I was well over 7,000 species and I got about 60 lifers. And my friend that I was traveling with, he was on his way to 8,000 and he got almost 100 lifers there.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's like a huge number of special birds there and some good ones too.
Yeah, it's rich in birds and quite distinct and different, that's for sure, than anywhere else. And California is really the heart of it. I mean, you have some different stuff as you get north up into Washington, but yeah, California is really the max West Coast diversity.
You can bird different parts, of course. I mean, would you fly into LA or San Francisco?
Yeah, so I would. The whole reason I did this was because I was headed to Taiwan to guide that trip that we've already chatted about a bit. And I was routed through LA, which, as you often are for trips headed to Asia from the States. And that was sort of a separate ticket from my flight from Pennsylvania to LA. And I realized I could easily add a couple days in LA on my way back. And even maybe blunt the jet lag a little bit was part of my thinking, since you're 3 hours, you know, less different than the US Eastern time. So yeah, I was able to add in a couple days there. So, I mean, it was a very short, I guess it was 3 nights in California, and I was just in the LA area. Didn't get any, well, greater LA. I got up, I'll tell you about, you know, went up into the mountains and I went up into the high desert for a bit. But yeah, it was a good taster, and it's kind of amazing what a high proportion of the sort of California special birds I did manage to see in a couple days. And the The first day, full day of birding I did there, well, I got in late at night after dark, so it was really my first day. I saw, what did I see, like 12 new birds. And, really? You know, I've birded ever since I've been a birder. I started in the States and I birded all around the States, but I just never got out there. And that was a fun day. And also it was a little bit sad because I realized this will never, ever happen to me again in North America. It's statistically impossible. And, you know, I've been looking at some of these California birds in my field guide since I was 11 years old. Bet. So it's 3 decades of looking at things like wren tit. And there's just something special about finally coming face to face with those things. It's a little bit different than, like, you know, if I'm going to Fiji tomorrow, I know about a handful of birds and there's some things I'd be really excited to see, but it's just different than this was in my guide when I was like a little kid.
I bet. It's quite an amazing place. So, I mean, L.A. itself is a bit of a zoo, isn't it? I mean, it's pretty overwhelming as a destination. Yeah, the driving and the how spread out it is. It's, I mean, we hired a car and got out there, and it's like you kind of hit the ground running, you know?
Yeah, it's a crazy kind of urban airport. It seems to be like right in the middle of maybe not the best part of L.A. And you're just out on the streets. I was driving through there. I stayed in this really cheap hotel near the airport, and that was quite an experience. It was actually one of the dodgiest hotels I've ever stayed in anywhere in the world, including like $1 hotels in Old Town Quito. But I was driving down one of these big, broad LA avenues, and there was a guy in front of me who had this like 1970s Dodge, and it had the tires that would kind of, there was a system to like bounce the car up and down, like in a rap video. I mean, it was so cool. Yeah. I thought I was going to see Snoop Dogg or something. It was like, it was kind of funny. These, like some of these stereotypes are coming to life here in LA.
I remember when I first went there, I went there when I was in my 20s. I think we passed through, I did a road trip with a friend. And I remember going to the hostel we stayed at, and there was like bullet holes in the windows. You know, there were like big thick glass windows with these bullet holes in them. And we drove around some pretty dodgy areas as well, but it's got everything, you know. And that's just as fancy and as like expensive areas as you could imagine. You know, so it's got the whole range. Eh?
Yeah, fascinatingly diverse, massive sprawl. That's for sure. You know, I wouldn't say I have a great affection for it, but it was an interesting place to see for the first time as an American. Driving around listening to Red Hot Chili Peppers, of course.
Yeah, very cool. How did you get on with the driving? I mean, you're a pretty experienced driver, but...
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't fazed by the driving, intense. That's for sure. Once you've arrived in Manila at 10 p.m. and then headed out into the urban jungle that is Manila, the sort of Mad Max... L.A. is nothing. L.A. is just like a calm day on a Yorkshire.
I think we were a little bit overwhelmed by it just because it's the wrong side of the road, you know, driving on the wrong side of the road for a start. So that was a little bit overwhelming. And then I guess there's a certain logic to traffic and driving in the States, which I guess is that comes a lot more naturally to you. But it, even just changing lanes and overtaking lanes and where to do what, it's quite... For a Brit, just to jump in was quite kind of overwhelming.
Where are the roundabouts? Excuse me.
No roundabouts. Where are the roundabouts?
Yeah.
There's quite a remarkable variety of habitats just within a stone's throw of LA. I mean, there's like some stuff is just so dry and scrubby, and then you're getting up into the mountains to kind of more humid stuff, so... Did you have a grand plan for your days of where to go?
I had a pretty loose plan. Our friend Dorian, who I recently interviewed on the podcast, I think he's from there. He's from California, I think, maybe the Bay Area, but he knows the area well. He lived in LA for a while, so he gave me a lot of really good advice. I mean, you probably dealt with this when you went to California. There are so many birders there. There's so many e-birders. There's just an unbelievable amount of data And it actually becomes a problem of too much rather than too little information. And it was just a lot to sort through. And so Dorian was basically able to just, you know, I told him the short list of birds I wanted to see, and he was able to point me in the right direction. His info was spot on. And so I mean, I covered a lot of different habitats in a short time. As you say, it's so diverse. I mean, some kind of lagoons, and, you know, the valley floor is kind of interesting. You've got scrub and quite a few wetlands, really tons of birds in those little remaining wetlands down in the valley. And then you get up into the foothills and you're in the oak, sort of oak chaparral, I guess. It's an interesting habitat because you got like low shrubs and then you have taller oaks and cottonwoods in some places. And then I actually got all the way up into the high desert, which is like sage. So you drive up through the mountains and then you come out and there's the big, I guess maybe it's part of the Great Basin, but it's basically like a high flat desert, semi-desert up there. Was briefly there, and then I went up into the actual Sierras and then back down to the valley. So yeah, it was one of these really short trips that felt like a ton of experience. It felt like sort of 2 weeks and it was like 3 days.
You briefly mentioned to me about your vehicle. Do you wanna explain about that?
Yeah, man, that was a very California experience. So when I reserved a rental car, I mean, the prices of rental cars now in the States are staggering. So I was pretty well resigned to paying well over $100 a day for any kind of car. I noticed when I was booking a car that a lot of them were electric vehicles. And I was thinking, boy, I think electric vehicles are great, but I'm not sure that's what I want as a rental car. Because yeah, I've never dealt with one of these things and I don't know how it is going to be to charge and so on. So I was very careful not to book an EV, but I still somehow ended up booking an EV, and I'm still not quite sure whether the car company just didn't tell me it was an EV or whether I missed some fine print somewhere. But I basically showed up and to pick up my car, and you know, I just got off a plane from Taipei and I'm jet lagged and tired, and they basically they say, yep, it's an electronic vehicle. Oh, I didn't think I was getting one. That's basically the only option in this class. Okay, I just decide I'm going to roll with this. I'm in California. This is going to be an interesting experience. And it was an interesting experience. So, yeah, it's a whole ecosystem of like charging stations and different kinds of charging stations. And it's, you know, the etiquette about like people queuing at these charging stations. So what I realized is, okay, I'm not staying in hotels that are nice enough to have a charging station like in the parking lot. So I have to go find a charging station. Okay. I look on Google Maps or whatever. This seems easy. There's charging stations everywhere. Ah, no problem. But pretty quickly I realize, oh, most of these are not rapid charging stations. They're sort of slow charging stations, like normal kind of amount of electricity. And it will take you like 6 to 10 hours to charge an EV's battery. So if you're at home, no problem. But for me on the road, that's definitely not an option. So I have to find these rapid charging stations. These you always have to pay for. And there's not that many of them. And there's often people queued up for them. And so basically, I spent the whole time in California just constantly worrying about finding rapid charging stations. And then a lot of these things, they don't actually work. Like there's one on the map and then you go there and it's out of commission for some reason, or it doesn't work nearly as fast as it's supposed to, or there's a huge queue of people. So, I mean, I spent in my very short time in California, I spent many hours at charging stations, basically, you know, sitting in my car in some kind of horrible strip mall parking lot.
When you want to be out birding.
Yeah. I did most of it in the dark, you know, pre-dawn or after sunset, which wasn't so bad. But at the same time, I mean, I was so tired. Like, I just wanted to be in my really, really dodgy hotel sleeping, not sitting there charging my car. So, Yeah, it was not the greatest experience, to be honest. This sort of culminated. I told you I went up into the high desert, so I drove up out of the valley through a mountain pass, and I went to a smaller town up there. And even before even doing this, I'd actually checked, and there were like 5 or 6 charge stations in this town. Because I didn't want to drive up there. It's a little bit far from LA. I didn't want to drive up there, exhaust my car's battery, and then find out there was no way to get a charge to get back to LA, right? Well, that is almost exactly what almost happened. I basically spent a pretty stressful 2 hours driving all around this area, going to charge station after charge station, and finding out either they were like trickle charge stations, or they were out of commission, or they weren't open yet. And it finally boiled down to, like, all my hopes were on one last charging station. And I went there, and it was actually in commission, but there was like 5 people waiting. So, you know, and when people, you know, it's not like a queue at a gas station, because you have to sit there for like an hour to get a full charge. So, you know, it's quite a lengthy amount of time waiting for a queue of like 5 people. So, but you know, at that point I was so happy that there actually was a charge station. Like, I almost felt privileged to have access to this thing, and yeah, queued up and finally got my car charged, and, you know, got to bed far later than I would have desired. I was wondering, like, what do I do? Like, I mean, there must be some kind of option where they send some kind of truck with a generator to charge up your car or something. I mean, it would be an absurd situation.
Charge you for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Or then I was asking myself, well, maybe I go to one of the slow charge stations and just sleep in my car all night while my car charges. Mm. You know, I don't think I can leave my car there. You know, the closest one to my hotel was like 4 miles away. Like, I was thinking, well, okay, do I leave it there and walk to the hotel and walk back in the morning? I mean, I was contemplating some pretty absurd options. So this should not be interpreted as naturally adventurous, as anti-EVs. I would just say, in terms of their functionality as a rental car, especially for a birder, it would not be what I would recommend. Not yet. Yeah, maybe in a few years the infrastructure will be there.
Interesting. I've never driven one. I think I might have driven a hybrid once, and I was just surprised. You know, when you just start moving, it's just totally kind of silent, and I found I was doing some birding from the car. You know, it might have been water birds or something like that, and I found it was really kind of nice to just kind of set off. You know, you wouldn't, sometimes you turn the engine on, and then, you know, the bird flies up or whatever with a sound, but it's just so nice and quiet that in some situations it was quite a nice vehicle to have while birding.
Yeah, totally. And I actually really liked the vehicle. I really liked the experience of driving it. I was thinking, if I could just take this home and plug it in, I would love to have one of these. I just don't want this as a rental for a couple days of intense birding.
Cool. So, let me know about some of your highlights. What were some of the sort of top bird experiences?
Yeah, there were so many. I mean, as I said, some of these things like California scrub jay and oak titmouse.
Was the wren tit everything that it was built up to be?
Yeah, oh, I really like that bird. I love those kind of taxonomic oddities and outliers.
Yeah,
a lot of character in that bird. I actually think my favorite birding was on the coast. Man, that Pacific coast is just beautiful, and it's so full of marine life and birds. It you know, it just has something that the East Coast very rarely has. It has a vibrancy to it that is really, it's really something. I mean, you're just seeing like sea lions all over the place. So yeah, I mean, the first morning I was there, I was pretty near the coast, and I went straight out to the coast just after sunrise, brought my coffee, like walked out onto this jetty, and it was just so beautiful. Just the sunrise. It's so cool to be on the West Coast and looking up to see, you have beautiful light. And there were sea lions. There were all kinds of pelagic birds offshore. There were like hundreds of black-vented shearwaters and a few fulmars flying around. You know, there's these cool rock shorebirds out on the West Coast, as black turnstones, as one wandering tattler on this jetty. You know, Pacific loon flies by offshore. Elegant terns flying around, gulls everywhere, different kind of subspecies of brown pelican. And on the East Coast, quite a good looking brown pelican. Yeah, the coast was just delightful. I mean, I could have spent days just on those jetties, just doing photography or sea watching.
And up in the mountains, I guess you got some good stuff.
So I remember you had a bit of a story about mountain quail. Mountain quail, for the non-birders or those who don't know about West Coast birding, it is just a legendarily difficult bird. It just seems to consistently be quite elusive. And, you know, I have a lot of birding friends on Facebook, and just occasionally somebody will pop up with some awesome photo of mountain quail. And it's always kind of celebrated as like, wow, like, that was lucky. You know, it's not like California quail or something that's just in people's backyards. It's like, it's a bird that really has maintained this aura of elusiveness. And of course, I've known that for decades, never seen this bird, but
good looking bird as well.
Oof, some of these Western American quails have a funny little top knot sticking up out of the top of their head, you know, like these bizarre random little feathers. This one has like the king of the top knots. It just has this like towering crest. But I really wanted to see this bird, you know, and all this, like, this is just like what you say, red to the bull, like all this elusiveness, and it's the most difficult, and you know, I was up for the challenge. I really wanted to see this bird. It's also just one of the best looking birds in that part of the world. So I did some research about where to find mountain quail. There's actually a kind of visitor center up in the Sierras where I guess they are feeders, and sometimes these things will actually come to those feeders. And that almost seemed too easy, but thankfully I was saved from that by the fact that the whole area was closed. I think it was either high fire risk or there'd been a recent fire or something. So that area was completely off limits. So it was back to the drawing board. I really had no idea how I was going to go about finding this bird. I think that's part of what was enjoyable about this whole experience. It was, so I woke up pre-dawn. I slept up in the high desert, and then I was crossing back into the LA Valley. I woke up pre-dawn, and I saw on the map what looked like a pretty small road through the mountains. And I thought, okay, this is the way to see this mountain quail. It's just to drive slowly along this road. And, you know, maybe I'll just luck into some. I'll have the windows open, and I'll listen for them, and, you know, I'll probably just bump into this bird. Well, that was not a good strategy, because the road was not what I thought it was going to be. Even though it was basically this two-lane winding road through the mountains, it's apparently used by people who commute all the way from Palmdale, like up and over the mountains and down into LA and work in LA and live out in Palmdale. Because I guess it's like an hour and a half away. So what I imagined is this like two-track gravel road through the national forest was like this motor derby road. I mean, it was insane. I mean, it was some of the most aggressive, unpleasant driving I've ever seen by people on this road. I guess they just drive it every day over and over again and probably resent it. And wow, that was like the last road in the world you would want to bird or be able to bird without just being smashed. So that strategy was out the window. I also came to realize this was such a like high traffic road that I guess the National Forest had set things up so there were very few places to actually get off of the motor speedway. I don't know if people just get into trouble up there, you know, camp and set fires or I don't know what, but there were almost no places to get off or park. But finally, I came to a campground, which I'd seen on eBird as being a decent place, and there was some interesting recent records there. I saw that mountain quail had been in that zone, and I figured, well, this is maybe my only chance to see anything. Pulled into this campground, realized, oh, you're not actually supposed to like park in the campground. Everything is so controlled. Well, you know, if you're not a registered camper, you're not even supposed to park in there. But I was at this point, I just decided I'm not going to worry about this. I'm just going to park in this campground and walk around and bird. And if I get caught, I'll deal with it. So I started walking around this area. There was a bit of a trail going up a sort of water course, a little trickling stream. I walked about a half a mile up. Lots of cool birds around. There's a whole bunch of Lawrence's goldfinches. This pretty scarce, erratic little finch. Erratic in its occurrence. But yeah, after about half a mile, I heard a mountain quail start to call. But it was way up the side of a mountain, like way, like almost at the limits of what I could hear. I bet you know what I did. Headed straight up the mountain. I was not messing around. I decided, I heard this thing. I don't think it's coming to me. I'm going to it. And so this was an epic bushwhack. I mean, this kind of oak chaparral stuff is thick. It was way harder to get through than I'd imagined. I mean, I was just flogging my way through this oak, and you know, the slope was, I mean, it felt like it was straight up. Slopes are never actually straight up, but you know, there's no trail. So it's one of these like vertical bushwhacks, right? Where you're like trying to go up, but at every step, the trees are kind of pushing you back down the slope. And it's just slogging my way up this slope. Thankfully, the quail kept calling occasionally, so I could, you know, it's very hard to navigate when you're just on a hillside like that, but I kept hearing it, and then, okay, head that way. I'm getting closer and closer and closer, and I'm thinking, I'm about to get awesome views of this mountain quail, this legendary bird. But again, I was wrong. I basically had this like flickering half second view right in front of me, because, you know, almost like eye level, because I'm going up this steep slope, and this thing basically runs through a tiny little gap, and that was it. I didn't even glimpse it after that. I didn't flush them up. You know, I thought, okay, well, maybe I'm going to bushwhack up there, and then they're going to flush up and get a flight view or something. No, they just melted away. I heard them call a bunch more times, but it was like they were all around me, but impossible to see. And after like another half hour, I just gave up and headed back down the mountain. So it was simultaneously really satisfying, but also leaves me wanting a better view of that beautiful bird.
It's pretty mega. I think I looked out on that. I don't think I knew exactly how difficult it was when I saw it. I knew it was around certain spots, and we found them along the road singing, and just walked straight up to them and got really nice photos and stuff. So I think we were a little bit lucky, but it's a beautiful bird.
Yeah, it does seem to come easier to some folks than it did to me sometimes. But overall, it does seem to just generally be quite a tough one. So yeah, it was a weird couple of days. It was this. You know, I was staying in the cheapest hotels I could find, which, as I mentioned earlier, were some of the worst hotels I've ever stayed in anywhere in the world. It really felt like there was a high probability of getting robbed in the parking lot of one of these places. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, some folks feel like that about all kinds of places that I think are perfectly safe, like the whole continent of Africa. But yeah, it was a seriously dodgy vibe. I mean, I actually took precautions to the extent of like when I left my car and I went to my room, I would like put my camera in this shopping bag and just like disguise anything of value. I mean, I could just so easily see like I leave to go charge my EV or something and somebody breaks into my room. I mean, it really sketchy vibes. I mean, this one place I stayed near the airport, there was just the back end of the parking lot was just completely derelict, and the tarmac had just crumbled away, and there were a couple dumpsters, and there were just piles of like furniture and mattresses and evidence of fires. And you know, this was just like the back end of the parking lot. It was like the part of the parking lot that they just didn't maintain anymore. It was a dodgy place. But anyways, very dodgy hotels, but then getting into these really cool natural areas and some nice parks and into the Angeles National Forest and, you know, beautiful coastline. Some of these super ritzy places out on the coast, you know, multi-million dollar houses and fancy little coffee shops. And so, yeah, quite a place of contrasts, that's for sure. Yeah, need to go back.
I've always thought that, you know, the States is not a place for me to live. You know, I would never want to live in the States. When I was in California, I was thinking, if I had money, you could live pretty well here. You could live in a beautiful place and have a nice, very nice lifestyle. But yeah, it's all about the money, isn't it?
For sure. Didn't somebody tell you in California, like, we live in paradise and we pay for it? I was thinking of that a lot. But yeah, we're going to make this a short episode because Charlie actually needs to get on a plane to leave Japan after, how long? You've been there, like 6 months or something?
6 weeks. Feels like 6 months.
So yeah, thanks as always to everybody for listening. Thanks for chatting, Charlie. That was fun. Glad we could fit it in between our busy schedules here. We were going to play out today with, of course, Mountain Quail. Got a pretty cool call. So catch everybody next week.